This message is supported by Boehringer Ingelheim, the maker of NexGard Plus, Afoxolaner, Moxidectin, and Pyrantel Chewable Tablets. Next level dog owners will do anything for their pets, especially when it comes to their well-being. And that means giving them next level protection from parasites with NexGard Plus Chews. NexGard Plus Chews provide one and done monthly protection against fleas, ticks, heartworm disease, roundworms, and hookworms. Plus, they're designed to be easy to give in a tasty, beef-flavored soft chew. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurologic disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventative. Ask your vet about NexGard Plus Chews.
Your future lay out there in the bullpen.
This is the bullpen.
Squad, bullpen, now.
Who let those guys up here?
Well, well, well. How the turntables.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Go ahead, call the producers.
Quit it now.
It's the bullpen here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Joe George, Brian McDonald here with you until 7 o'clock. We'll have Texas A&M basketball coming up at 7:30. Obviously, there's a lot going on. Of course, I'm at work. I'm not like Beard and Connor and Brandon who can't come to work today. I'm here working extra. I was trying to think of how to view this Texans game this weekend. And it's weird to think that, like, I try not to, well, I don't know. This job, you have to have words in your mouth. You have to say things, Brian. You have to say words. But, like, I'm almost speechless still thinking about the idea that the Houston Texans are one of the last 8 teams left in the NFL playoffs.
Yeah, did you see the stat? I can't remember since what year it was. I think it was 1998. But this was, the first year since 1998 that neither Tom Brady nor Peyton Manning are one of the final 8 quarterbacks.
That's weird.
Yeah, I mean, talk about end of an era.
Yeah, it's
first time since 1998.
It's crazy. Like it's bizarre what has happened in the NFL, how much it's changed over the last couple of years, and even like before the season. Like if you look at the AFC, it kind of lines up to what you think it's going to be. Obviously, the Houston Texans are the team that doesn't make sense on paper. Like when you think back to the beginning of the season to where they are now, you'd have thought Cincinnati Bengals. Like I picked the Bengals to go to the Super Bowl. Who knows what would have happened if Joe Burrow didn't get hurt, but these are your final 4 quarterbacks, C.J. Stroud, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes. The AFC makes sense. The NFC, I don't know. The NFC is a...
Yeah, read off the quarterbacks for the NFC.
Jared Goff, Brock Purdy.
Yeah.
Who am I missing?
Baker Mayfield.
Baker Mayfield.
And one more.
Who's the other quarterback?
Jordan Love.
Jordan Love, that guy.
One of those 4 quarterbacks will be in the Super Bowl.
I hope it's Goff.
I mean, Goff's been in the Super Bowl before. They scored, 3 points against the Patriots?
Yeah, it was the worst Super Bowl I've ever watched. I was actually watching that Super Bowl.
What was it, 10-3, I think, the final? It was awful.
I watched that Super Bowl at Beard's house. It was me, Beard, and Branham watching that Super Bowl. But so this season is absolutely – it makes no sense. And it's funny, thinking about the Texans and, this idea that people are continually wanting to apologize – or feel bad about takes that would happen. Like, what the Houston Texans have accomplished makes no sense on paper. You have a rookie quarterback and a rookie head coach winning a division for the first time in NFL history. You have C.J. Stroud, first rookie quarterback to win a playoff game. I think it was since Mark Sanchez was the last one to do it. Like, what they have accomplished is absolutely baffling. But when you start to look at the game this weekend, I'm excited. Like we did this exercise yesterday during the Killer Bees because, the Bills game was going on during our show of who would you rather face? Would you rather face the Chiefs or the Ravens? And there's a fair argument for both sides. The Baltimore Ravens.
I had this argument with a buddy of mine. I'll be interested to see where you come out on this because I was definitive one side. He was definitive to the other side. So,
and I don't think there's a lot of people that are like there's this middle ground.
No.
And most of the time, I also, Brian, before we get into it, what you prefer – it's funny that it's not which team you're more confident is going to stop C.J. Stroud, which team you're more confident is going to have great success against the Texans defense. I think you're more picking apart the other opponent and saying this team is more beatable.
100%.
Now Vegas would tell you that the opening line for Chiefs-Texans was going to be 6.5. The opening line for Ravens Texans was 9.5. But Brian, you just said you saw.
I just saw a line that someone posted on Twitter that has been bet down to 7. Now that hasn't updated on some of my sports apps yet.
That
might be, you know, an update that comes in the morning. But yeah, I'm seeing now on Twitter it's been bet down 2 points to 7.
So my answer was, and it's Baltimore. Baltimore was the team that I wanted to face more than Kansas City. And it's not the weapons on offense, I don't think are that different. Mark Andrews, according to John Harbaugh, made significant strides today in his chance to play this weekend. So it's obviously like a major storyline that like everyone's going to be following here to see what they have. Mark Andrews and Travis Kelce, the way Kelce's play, like I don't feel like is this crazy difference. Zay Flowers and Rashee Rice, to me, is not that big of a difference. You know, the Ravens' run game is good, just like Pacheco is good. The defenses are both pretty damn talented. Like, Roquan Smith is an elite player, so is Patrick Queen. But, like, the Chiefs have one of the best defenses in the NFL. The difference is the quarterback. And that, to me, is why my answer was the Ravens, is because Patrick Mahomes has 2 Super Bowl wins. CJ Stroud has the same amount of playoff wins as Lamar Jackson.
Patrick Mahomes has 2 Super Bowls. Lamar Jackson has 1 playoff win.
Exactly. Yeah, so like, for me, it was the Ravens.
That was exactly my choice, too. My buddy took the Chiefs. He wanted the Chiefs because his idea, and I get it. Like, the Ravens were the best team this year. The Chiefs seem vulnerable, and I get that idea. But to me, when you kind of break down like the 3 things that I was thinking about as far as picking out, you know, who I'd want the Texans' opponents, there's really 3 factors. 1, the weather. The weather's going to be bad in both places. It really wouldn't have mattered. 2, the defenses. They both have good defenses. You know, can they stop C.J. Stroud? Both of them potentially could because they both have good defenses. So then the only factor left was quarterback. And like you just broke down, Patrick Mahomes, I'd rather face Lamar Jackson every single day of the week other than Patrick Mahomes. Maybe this is the year that Lamar Jackson broke through. He wouldn't be the first quarterback to maybe struggle the first few times in the playoffs and then break through and win a Super Bowl. Like Matt Stafford, he was, I think, 0-3 mm-hmm. in the playoffs with the Lions before he broke through with the Rams a couple years ago. But if I'm going to have to pick this on quarterback, I'm picking to face Lamar Jackson because we saw the Texans. It was week 1. Feels like a lifetime ago. These teams are different. But we saw the Texans slow down Lamar Jackson a little bit in their first game. And you brought up the running games. The Ravens do run the ball well, but they don't really have a single runner, mm-hmm. like an individual player on the running game that I fear, unless you include Lamar Jackson. Which is fair, but I don't
think you have to. He rushed for his third most rushing yards of his career this year. Like, he's still, even though they went to this new offense, the biggest thing is, like, it's not the designed runs that Greg Roman was running.
And that's what happened in week 1, too. Like, he wasn't running a lot on the designs, it was scrambles. But if you're talking specifically running backs, I would fear Isaiah Pacheco more than anybody on the Ravens roster.
Yeah, so that to me is where it starts. And then this is, it's kind of like the Texans stuff. Lamar Jackson's the MVP. But I'm not going to apologize or think badly of Lamar Jackson. It's more about how great we all feel about Patrick Mahomes. There's no reason to bet against Tom Brady. There was never a reason until really recently to bet against LeBron James. You don't bet against generational talents. And like that's what Patrick Mahomes is. Every single year, like I did, I'm an idiot. I picked Joe Burrow to go to the Super Bowl. Joel and Jeremy and many others picked the Chiefs to go. It's probably the right pick until Patrick Mahomes retires or until another team consistently stops them from going to at least an AFC title game. Like they're just like the Astros, the Chiefs are. They just keep going to, at a minimum, of the AFC championship game, just like the Astros go to the AFC.
I would even put them a step beyond the Astros. To me, this is kind of like, this is like picking another Eastern Conference team to make the NBA Finals during the era of Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
That's what this feels like to me. I don't even remember what my preseason pick was. I didn't have any money on the line. I didn't have any Vegas bets or anything. But certainly a bet against Patrick Mahomes is going to feel full-hearted more often than not.
Yeah. So when you look at this game, the first thing I want to start with is here. And we'll hear from D'Amico Ryans in just a second. But like, you look back to week 1. And I'm curious what people think of the week 1 matchup versus now and how they view this game. Because obviously the Texans got smoked. They lost 25-9. C.J. Stroud was not who he became. And I think that, to me, is the number one difference. Like, it's not just Damian Pierce versus Devin Singletary is a big part of this. The Nico Collins emergence is a big part of this. But, you know, to me, week 1 means absolutely nothing. It was C.J. Stroud's first start. It was D'Amico Ryans and Bobby Slowick's first game as coaches head coaches or OCs in the NFL. It's just, it is a tough game to start your career for all three parties involved. And they got bullied, frankly, on that game. At the same time, even though the Texans lost 25-9, like if you think back to it, you know, Steven Nelson gets the interception like early in the first quarter. That game until late, it felt like the Texans were competitive.
Oh, I can go beyond that, Joe. What was the score at halftime? I know it. Do you remember what the score at halftime was?
No.
7-6. I mean,
interesting.
Yeah, so I feel the same way. Look, I think the things that didn't go well for the Texans, we've seen improve over the course of the year. Like, Nico Collins hadn't broken out. C.J. Stroud didn't break out. Basically, the offense did virtually nothing. But what we did see is that the Texans' defense, even in week one under D'Amico Ryans, when they really hadn't probably gotten all the kinks out of their system, they hadn't really learned the full system, they hadn't, you know, taken a level up as they have throughout the year. Even that team, it was 7-6 at halftime, and holding the Ravens, who are one of the better offenses in the league, to 25 points. Like, if you told me they'll hold them to 25 points, I'd probably take it.
Yeah.
I mean, I would hope for better. I think your odds obviously would be better if you held them to 20, let's say. But 25 feels like an obtainable number. So to me, that's encouraging because I know the offense is capable of way more than the team that went out there and scored 9.
Absolutely. Let's hear from D'Amico Ryan. Here is D'Amico Ryan talking about now versus that week one matchup with Baltimore.
Man, you talk about drastic improvements. Our first game going against Baltimore, man, it's a tough place to play, right? Rookie quarterback, right? New team, new start going out to Baltimore. You look up, remember going in at halftime and, like, man, we were right there, right? Going against a really tough team, we were right there. Really tight game, and it kind of, you know, they took it away in the second half. But, you know, from there to where we are now, we've definitely grown. Completely different team, right? They're a completely different team. They're trying to figure out, you know, who they would be offensively with the new coordinator. But they've done an outstanding job. Baltimore, with their defense, I think they've been probably the most consistent defense throughout the entire year. And we've grown. Their offense have grown. They've done a really great job. So it'll be a tough matchup.
And then that's where, like, what we were just saying, too. It is a totally different team. And specifically, it's just, like, think back to where we were. Like, before week one, it was the Texans are going to have a top three pick. The Texans made an awful trade because they gave up the chance to get Marvin Harrison Jr. and pairing with C.J. Stroud. And, like, versus today, like, they're one of the final eight teams left in the NFL. The other big storyline that's been going on, like Brian mentioned, the weather. Like, the weather is going to be worse in Kansas City, I think it was, than it would be in Baltimore. Mostly it was wind was going to be the big determining factor in that one. Both are relatively the same at this point. Like,
yeah, they're projecting, just so people know that are listening, they're projecting 27 degrees. And the app that I'm looking at does have a little snowflake icon, so I guess there is a possible chance of snow, which...
It's okay.
You know what? D'Amico talked about it. You and I talked about it. I make not much of the week one game other than the fact that I think the Texans defense could slow down the Ravens because they did it in week one. The thing I'm thinking back to is not a game against the Ravens. It's outdoor at MetLife Stadium against the Jets, because as good as the Jets defense is and was that day, a lot of that to me was a factor of the weather. You had the temperatures weren't as cold as this. I believe they're in the 50s, but you had a lot of rain. You had a lot of wind. The one thing that would concern me the most is not really even the Ravens. If we get into a situation where it's below freezing, it's snowing, and there's a decent amount of wind, until we see C.J. Stroud do it, because we have the thoughts and memories of that Jets game from a month ago in our head, it's going to be tough to believe they're going to put up enough points. But we'll save that until we actually see what it looks like on the field in Baltimore on Saturday.
Yeah, and tomorrow on the Killer Bees, Jeremy and I and Joel are going to do a kind of a deeper dive into what C.J. Stroud, his success has looked like in the weather, because, like, that's one thing, like, we all – like, look, like, they live in Houston right now. Obviously, we all feel it. We go outside, it sucks. So, like, frankly, like, the weather in Houston right now, like, the idea of acclimating, the Texans are practicing outside, is not the worst thing in the world to happen. So, at least the idea of, like, getting your body used to this
moment.
Yeah,
I mean, it's colder in Houston right now than it will be in Baltimore
exactly.
On Saturday.
So, like, I like the fact that they're practicing outside at this moment. It's a small thing. I mean, C.J. Stroud played at Ohio State, so, like, we're going to, you know, go through all of his college games and kind of, you know, deep dive into how often CJ has played in this weather and kind of like what the results have looked like. The Michigan game stands out. It wasn't the worst game that, like, it wasn't the worst weather game. Their issue more is that, like, half Ohio State's team had the flu. But, like, CJ was still pretty good in that game. Like, we all, like, yes, JJ McCarthy led that team back, but CJ was still pretty good in that game. But here's D'Amico Ryans talking about playing in the cold this weekend.
Right. Not sure where we'll be playing, but we do know the elements. There will be cold weather. Gracious that we have cold weather here in Houston this week. It comes at the right time for us to be able to go out, practice outside in the cold weather. I don't think you get used to it. I always say, no matter what the conditions are for a game, right, you have 3.5 hours to suck it up, and whatever that weather is, you have to deal with it and be your best in that moment. You're not the only one dealing with the conditions. The other team, they're dealing with the conditions as well. So it's no excuse, no matter what the weather is, where we have to go. Like, man, you have to be excited about the opportunity to play, and whatever it is, you suck it up for 3 hours and you play your best.
And that's the other thing too for me with this game is it doesn't matter. Like both teams play in the same weather. Like you have to win this game. Weather is not an excuse. Just like it wasn't earlier in the season when you played in bad game. It is not an excuse because it's not going to be 15, 20 mile per hour wind. It's just going to be cold. It's going to be cold and it might snow a little bit. It might be a little windy, but like at least so far, unless something drastically changes, it does not look like this game should be a massive concern about the weather. And like I said, the reality is, like, they play in it too. So
yeah, and a lot of these players have played in it. I mean, you mentioned C.J. Stroud, Ohio State, Nico Collins, Michigan, mm-hmm. Jerry Hughes played in Buffalo. There's a lot of players on this team that have played in weather, in, you know, cold weather conditions, even if it wasn't in the pros or in college. It could have been in high school, depending on where they're from. So, I mean, just as many players from the South that the Texans have. I'm sure if you look up and down the Ravens roster, there's a lot of guys from Florida and California and Southern states that would have also had the same problems and concerns.
And here's the thing, like, too, like, I know I'm in the minority right now, but, like it doesn't matter. Like, it does not matter. There is no advantage to living in a cold state and then playing in a game in that same state. Because Buffalo is not running around on a Tuesday and Wednesday outdoors practicing like it's a game. They are walkthroughs. They're often indoors. Just because, like, you're in it on a day-to-day basis, it does not change. I lived it every year until I was 22, basically. So, like, 23. Like, I experienced the awfulness that is Chicago winter. I played in high school football games. I played in college rugby games. It doesn't matter. Cold is cold, and it doesn't matter if you're used to it or you're not used to it. It's about just not sucking in that moment. I think it's the worst excuse you can have to why a team loses a game.
It is, and we saw this is a long time ago before you were here, Joe, but we saw kind of the opposite of this with the Texans a long time ago. There was a game, and this is, I think, maybe even David Carr era, so this is going way back, but there was a game where the Steelers were coming to town, and the gimmick the Texans tried to pull off was, this is like a September game.
I know this story.
Okay, yeah. So they opened the roof and then wore, I guess, their white jerseys so that the Steelers would have to wear black. Mm. With the roof open in September, the Steelers still kicked their ass.
Exactly.
It didn't matter.
And then now they can't open the roof since, because what they realized is they poorly designed NRG and the sun went right into the most expensive seats in the stadium.
Yeah, you did.
So
yeah,
they kind of butcher that one for the future. But it's so dumb. Like, it's just cold. Like, it's not 20 mile an hour per wind. They'll be fine. It's not an excuse. Bare minimum, I expect the Texans to cover. That's a low bar at 9.5.
Even at 7?
I don't know.
The line's dropped.
I don't know. If it's actually dropped everywhere, like, I have a bet plus 9.5 already on the Texans this weekend. I think at a minimum they cover that. I don't expect them to win. I'm probably going to pick the Ravens to win this game. But I think they will cover. All right. At the end of the Killer Bees, we started having this conversation about, we were trying to do comparisons from, you know, the 23 Texans are who. But it kind of led us into this conversation to C.J. Stroud. And long term, like, what are your expectations for him now and the rest of his career as a Houston Texan? We talk about that next year on the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 5 and 92.5 at work, in the gym, and in the bedroom.
I've seen the huge difference it's made for you in the gym, at work, and in the bedroom.
full day's work of producing and corralling all of the individual conflicting personalities at ESPN 97.5? Well, if you're jumping Joe George, you do another hour of sports talk. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's The Bullpen.
The Bullpen here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Joe George here with you until 7 o'clock. We're going to talk some Astros in the next segment. Kendall Graveman is officially out for the 2024 season. So we'll get into that a little bit and just kind of state of the bullpen and where this team is at going forward. But we're having this conversation on the Killer Bees, and it kind of, you know, about a comparison for the Texans. And it kind of led us into a conversation about CJ Stroud and what your expectations are for him going forward. And of course, like the big thing that comes up is Super Bowls. And we started talking about how many Super Bowls you want from CJ Stroud in his career. And it's a fair, I think it's fair, like on first
blush. Well, if we're going to say want, 10.
Yeah. How many do you expect?
You know what? I said this, you and Joel were doing the show. Jeremy was out that day. During Cash or Trash It, I said the Texans would win two Super Bowls with CJ Stroud before the Astros won another one. I stand by that. And because of that reason, I will say two with CJ Stroud.
So I think that's fair. And I think on, like, first reaction, everyone's response would be, like, at least two. And the more I thought about it and kind of looked at the history of the NFL, like, very quickly through Google, I'm going to say my expectation for C.J. Stroud in his career as a Houston Texan, no matter what, even if they pull off the miracle of all miracles and won it this year, is one.
Yeah, I mean, that would be the most, you know, reasonable. But a lot of times you see these elite quarterbacks, or at least the ones that establish themselves as elite, because I know Brady was drafted as a sixth-round pick. But a lot of these elite quarterbacks don't just win one, they win two. So if you believe C.J. Stroud is at that level, I think two is certainly in play. But, yeah, one is the most reasonable ask, I would say.
And that's where I think, like, the conversation, like, differs. It's like, because you're right. Like, the elite quarterbacks most of the time win two. Your Montanas, your Bradys, your Mannings, even though Manning really didn't win the second one, but he was the quarterback.
So he was the quarterback.
He gets credit for it, but he was so good the previous one when they lost, like, you give him a little bit of slack. But, like, there's only been 13 quarterbacks in NFL history that have won two Super Bowls. So it's not exactly this, like, large list of quarterbacks.
No, it's definitely not a lot.
And it's, like, it's Bart Starr and Terry Bradshaw and, like, some of these guys who played so long ago. Aikman, like, he obviously gets a lot of credit. Steve Young, I think, has two. I'm sure he does.
Steve Young only has one. He was a backup for...
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
He has one
as a starter.
Yeah, he has one as a starter. But so there's such a few number of them that have two that, like, as much as I love C.J. Stroud, and, like, he is a top five quarterback in the NFL right now. Like, it is very clear. I think he is in the top five. It is, like, when we do our Killer Bees preseason rankings next year, when most of them come out, my guess is the top five is going to look like one through five is going to be in one through five is going to be the four quarterbacks playing right now in the AFC and Joe Burrow. I don't think anyone in the NFC will be in the conversation. And if C.J. Stroud is not in, maybe it's Herbert.
It'd be tough to put Herbert above Stroud right now. I mean, he obviously has zero playoff wins, and we don't even know who his coach is going to be. But if Jim Harbaugh did interview for that job today, so if he were the Chargers' choice and became the next coach for Justin Herbert, I think what we've seen from the rookie records Justin Herbert has set from the 5,000-yard passing season, from the pedigree coming into the NFL, I think a lot of people would take that leap. If Harbaugh's his coach and put him into the top five, but on the field results, I would put Stroud ahead of him.
Yeah, I think so too. Like, I'm good with C.J. Stroud as a top five quarterback. I mean, my top five would be, a lot of it's going to depend on what happens in the playoffs here, because
dependent upon the playoffs.
No, I think Lamar being number two.
Yeah, you could, if Lamar made the Super Bowl, you could put him ahead of Josh Allen.
Yeah, well, see, for me, it's Burrow. Mine, it's Mahomes, it's Burrow, and then right now it would be Lamar, Allen, and CJ.
I'm fine with that list. I would flip-flop Allen and Lamar, but I'm fine with that list.
Yeah, it's so that's where I think we're at. But so that for me, like, expectations-wise for CJ, it's one Super Bowl and it's at least one MVP. Like that. That is where I think I view long-term CJ Stroud. I know it feels like a low bar.
No. I'm not even going there. Yeah. I just, as someone who had to sit through the James Harden or Russell Westbrook in the James Harden or Steph Curry MVP debates, I'm just not ready to go through the MVP debates again.
We kind of had them this year.
Those ruined. Yeah, that's true. There was a brief, like, 2 to 3 week period where Stroud was talked about as the MVP candidate.
If CJ doesn't get hurt and they win, you know, and he wins two games,
I still don't think he wins it.
If they would have got to 11 wins with CJ Stroud, Lamar probably still wins it because of what he did against San Francisco.
I think he could. I think he could have got to top three, but I still would. I could still see even in that scenario, I could still see Lamar, Dak, and Brock Purdy being ahead of him.
No, I think that's totally fair. But like, he went at a top five finish as a rookie. Honestly, yeah. He still could.
I think he could be top five. It'll be tough.
Yeah, like now that they distribute more votes to than just you only get a first place votes and that's it. That's why like the narrative that Russell Wilson never had an MVP vote is kind of like
kind of dicey. Until how long ago it was? Yeah, you're only voting for first place until what? How long ago? A couple years?
I think it's been 2 years.
Yeah,
it's very new. It might be a year. This might be year two of it. Honestly, this year. So it is CJ Stroud. That would be my expectations for him in his career is win one Super Bowl, win one MVP, and anything else past that is absolutely gravy. Now, below that, I would expect CJ Stroud and the Houston Texans to make the playoffs. Going forward, I would say like 80 to 90% of the seasons he's here in Houston. So, like,
yeah, I mean, you could excuse, you know, a year where there's a catastrophic injury, things happen.
You can excuse next year.
Okay, based upon what?
It's going to be his second year. Sometimes there's a sophomore slump. Sometimes,
well, CJ Stroud is the guy that we think he is. I don't think you'd have the sophomore slump.
You have a brutal schedule next year.
The schedule is brutal, but I think, I mean, one of the games we talked about as being brutal is the Cowboys. Certainly, I feel a little bit better about that Cowboys game after the Packers hung half a hundred on them.
It's a regular season game, so that's when the Cowboys are good.
Yeah, I get it. Look, I think sometimes schedule talk gets overrated because we don't know. We don't know what week we know the opponents, but we don't know what week they play them in. So, I mean, any team that you view as tough, let's say you got the Ravens in week 15, Lamar gets hurt before that. That's not a hard game.
It's just
game.
Like the Jets this year. Like,
yeah, it's not something I really like, you know, worrying all that much about.
Yeah, no, but my point was just that, like, if they do miss the playoffs next year, I don't think it is this end of the world mentality. Like, when we were doing the comparisons, we asked, you know, Jeremy asked us this question of, what if they're the 15 Astros? Like, of course we're all good with that. You make the playoffs, you're a surprise. You missed the playoffs in 2016. They won the World Series in 2017.
Yeah.
Like, as long as the end result is still there, like, if they have a tough year next year, I just don't think it's, like, this end-of-the-world thing. But my expectations going forward for CJ is that, like, 80 to 90% of the time, they're going to be in the playoffs.
I would agree with that. Just to play that scenario out, if they end up next year, let's say 8-9, but CJ still looks great, and they lose a couple games late, maybe the defense takes a step back. In that scenario, I'm not pressing the panic button.
Yeah, it's more about – and really, and that's where it's still – it's always about CJ going forward. Like, from now to the end of time, it is all about CJ. We'll see. I'm at the point now, if you missed the news, Bobby Sloak was requested again by another team with the Seahawks. Like, I kind of feel like this is the end of Bobby Sloak era.
He is, by the way, according to Jimmy Shapiro and Bet Online, he is the betting favorite to become the Titans head coach.
I don't get them. I don't get the Titans.
He's top 3 to 5 basically for everybody, but the only one where he's favored is the Titans.
Like, Amy Adams Skunk or whatever, Strunk, whatever her name is. Part of the reason why she fired Mike Vrabel was because he went up to a podium when he was being inducted into the Patriots Ring of Honor.
Yeah.
And being like, it's not always easy to win. And like, you're just going to keep taking from Houston.
His exact comment was something like, you don't know how good you have it because it's not this good everywhere. And she took that
as
Tennessee, which I sort of get, but that's not the only stop where Mike Vrabel's been. I think he was talking about the Texans. I really do.
I love the Titans. They make me giggle is how I feel about them. All right. The Houston Astros. They just lost their seventh inning man for 2024. What's next? And I've got a question for BMAC about something totally not sports related. That's next here on the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.com. We keep getting away with it.
I want the ball. Give me the ball.
We now gently return you to the Veritex Community Bank Studios and the dulcet tunes of Joe George live in the bullpen.
The bullpen here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Before we get into the Astros, BMAC, you saw the Alaskan Airlines flight where the door flew off?
No, I didn't.
You didn't see this?
No, I didn't see it.
Like mid-flight, the door flew off.
Like what? Like
the door flew gone.
Is it like the door that you load in, or is it like that emergency door or whatever?
One of the emergency ones. Gone.
Just ripped off.
I think so. All I know is I've seen the phone. It's gone. Now, like, no one died.
So they land. They like emergency land and everything's fine?
Everything's fine.
Except for they probably got really cold for a while?
Probably. Alaskan Airlines gave them $1,500 each. That's low, right?
That feels low.
That feels really low to be on an airplane in which the door is missing.
Yeah.
And you probably feel like you're going to die.
Pain and suffering, you know, mental anguish. I mean, help me out. You've flown way more than I have. I've flown 2 round trips my entire life.
That's it.
Yeah, I told you, it's a low number. But $1,500 from the little bit of pricing that I've done, like, that would even cover some of the seats on the plane.
Exactly. Like,
like a first-class seat, the people in first class, that wouldn't cover their ticket.
No, it's probably towards the back of the plane, so, like, it's for the poor.
Still, but, I mean, if the door rips off, you think you're going to die.
It's true.
You at least got to cover the full price of the ticket. To me, bare minimum.
I think it's, like, triple.
Bare minimum to me was highest price ticket on the plane plus $1,000. Bare minimum, which to me, there's no way $1,500 could be that.
That's a good. That's a solid strategy. Like $500, like whatever it is, plus $1,000 is good. But $1,500,
there's no way.
Way too.
There had to be tickets on that plane that cost more than that.
Yes, and like I'm just surprised. Like, but what are your options? Like, you can't. What are you going to sue for? Mental damages? I guess you could.
It's 2024. You could definitely sue good for point. Mental. Yeah, you could claim PTSD. You could claim a lot of things.
I can never fly again.
Exactly.
Like, so, like, now I have to drive everywhere. So, like, now I need you to cover the cost of a new car because I drive to New York every summer and I need you to pay for, like, all my mileage for the rest of my life because I can't fly because I'm scared.
Yeah. There are certainly grounds for a lawsuit somewhere if they don't think that payment is enough.
Yeah, I think I'd have to look at the lawsuit. If someone was like, the door flew off, here's $1,500, I'm like, that ain't going to cut it, dude.
All right. Well, so since you fly way more than I do, what would it cost for you to walk away and never think about it again? At least as far as never thinking about suing them.
See, here's the thing. I have a low bar, okay?
Okay.
It's not a super low bar, but I cheat when I get asked these questions. I have $30,000 in student loan debt.
So $30,000
is always my answer. Like, would you get punched in the face by Mike Tyson? Yeah, like, knock out my student loan debt, like, and my hospital bills. I'm good.
Yeah, okay. I see. That was a higher number than I thought you were going to say. I thought you were going to say like $5,000 or something like that.
No, we got to go more than that. I think you can get more than that if you sue. Maybe not.
Once the lawyer fees are taken out, I don't know.
Now, if a lawyer told me the most I could get through like a lawsuit is 15 and they offered 10, I would take it. I probably would take 5.
Most likely this thing is being settled anyway. You're never actually getting to court.
All I know is $1,500 is not enough.
$1,500 is definitely not enough.
To be on an airplane in which the door left. The door should not leave the building before you land. That's all I know.
The building?
The plane. All right. Kendall Graveman's out for 2024. He's left the building.
So he actually got sucked out the plane and he's gone.
Yeah. So apparently Kendall Graveman obviously got hurt, didn't pitch in the ALCS. I was off the roster even. I think he was off the roster for the ALDS, thinking back to it. And so he said that they were hoping that rest and rehab would fix this. And that basically they knew surgery was kind of always on the table, but they thought that maybe rest rehab would mean he could pitch in 2024. The type of surgery it is, it's 12 months. Like, it doesn't really matter what your timeline is of when you have the surgery. He's just out for 2024 based on when he got hurt because the Astros were in the playoffs. But he warmed up in December. He started trying to get ready. Felt the pain again. Now he's out. And what's tough about this is that Jim Crane is treating the luxury tax like a salary cap. And they have not added anything of quality to their bullpen.
Like, no, they had that guy from Kansas City who had an ERA of like over 8 last year.
Yeah, something called a Dylan Coleman. But right now, Chandler Rome tweeted out this. They've lost over 200 innings between their bullpen and what they've lost and guys going to free agency.
It's going to be a Sugarland bullpen. I mean, that's kind of what it's going to be. Ryan Pressly, it's going to be Pressly, Abreu, Montero, and the rest is the Sugarland bullpen. If that's basically what it's going to be.
If the words Forrest Whitley are coming out of your mouth, you have a problem, Dana Brown.
Forrest Whitley, at this point, you would have to expect, unless he just completely falls apart during spring training, which, what, pitchers and catchers are, what, a month away at this point, or close to a month away?
Yep.
Unless he completely falls apart during spring training, he's going to have a valuable role in this bullpen.
Absolutely. Spencer Arrighetti, who Dana Brown has talked about multiple times, could have a role in this bullpen. Like
you're otherwise known as your top starting pitching prospect, and now you're going to throw him into the bullpen because you can't spend a couple of bucks on a reliever in the free agent market?
Honestly, Brian, like their best-case scenario right now for the bullpen, if they don't add anyone, is that by the grace of the baseball gods, Lance McCullers and Luis Garcia come back healthy at some point this year. And that Lance McCullers, Luis Garcia, Fromber, Urquidy, and Justin Verlander can be your 1-5 in your rotation. And Hunter Brown moves to the bullpen.
And so would J.P. France.
And J.P. France. Like, right. like that might be, or J.P. France or Urquidy or one, like
yeah,
somewhere in
have
there.
Two, you, that would open up the opportunity for two starters to then move into the bullpen.
Now,
if that hits, then I think a lot, not all the fears, but a lot of the fears go away. But, I mean, Lance McCullers, what, best case all-star break, probably?
Who knows?
Luis Garcia, I would say best case maybe June.
Yeah.
So you're still having to talk about best case, like best case scenario, having to get through 2 months or otherwise known as one-third of your season with a bullpen that really shouldn't be seen outside of Constellation Field
and
Sugarland.
And look, you can fix your bullpen a little bit at the deadline. But look what you did last year and where you are now. Now, he got replaced by Martin Maldonado already as a starting catcher in Chicago. But you traded Corey Lee, who was once thought of as one of your best prospects, for Kendall Graveman. Like, you traded Drew Gilbert, and you traded the other outfielder. But, like, you can't keep trading your best prospects away. You can't move Melton and Arrighetti for bullpen arms. Like, you need something that's sustainable. Now, there is a report from the New York Post, and then Michael Schwab followed up on that today, believe it or not, whatever you want, that the Astros are still talking to Hector Neris, which is a positive thing. Like, based on the reliever market, yes, Jordan Hicks got 4 years, $44 million. Josh Hader is expected to break or is trying to break every record he can contract-wise for a closer, which is a high bar because Edwin Diaz said it last year. Like, you have Hector Neris and Maton. They're still free agents. Like, there are still good arms available right now, and that market is moving like a snail. So there's a chance you still could be in on a guy like Hector Neris. The thing is, you kind of have to be. I understand.
But we know that it feels like we know that the Astros won't.
But
I mean,
you're not asking to go. You're not asking for Shohei Ohtani.
No,
that's what
I get
understand
it.
About Jim Crane.
I get it, but I mean, you talked about it in the open of this conversation about them treating the luxury tax line like a salary cap. I mean, they're already over it today. So I mean, you add it now again for people who don't realize this. The salary tax is the salary tax is calculated at the end of the season. So the Astros could go into the season over the line, still make moves in the season to get under, which I fully would expect Jim Crane to do. But certainly if you then go in and add Hector Neris, who he's definitely making more than $5 million per year, you're gonna have a much harder time getting under that line before the season's over. So fully trying to win this season, signing Hector Neris, bringing Maton back, and doing a lot of other moves that we've talked about over the course of the last few months make all the sense in the world, and the Astros should have done them yesterday. But if you think about the salary tax line, I just don't see, from what we've seen in Jim Crane, who's only gone over the line once, and it was a year where that penalty was forgiven in the COVID year, I just don't see Jim Crane doing it.
Yeah, I don't either.
Especially in a year where they're suffering cutbacks because of the loss of the money they would have gotten from AT&T Sportsnet.
Yeah, now, but that was their choice.
I know it was their choice, but I think they've taken some of those losses out on the roster.
No, yeah, you know, Jim Crane has made the choice to invest in the hotels and bars that apparently are not going to start getting built for like 5 years when this team is ass again. And he is trying to say that that's a good idea, that that's a good investment to invest in a TV network in which the only program you carry that's live is Astros and Rockets games. And they're not going to invest in that even to make that a watchable TV channel into which if you only have like three services you can watch. Like, I get it. But like, they're not making smart business decisions. If their goal is to win, they are laughing in their own faces. Like, they are – the idea that the Astros are this like – number two betting favorite to win the World Series, to get to the World Series from the American League, I see it on paper, and I see, like, you can fix a bullpen at a deadline, you can, but, like, so far, Dana Brown's trades are, like, not great, to be honest.
I can't take that out on Dana Brown, though.
I mean,
he's being limited by the owner.
I mean, I think the Corey Lee for Kendall Graveman trade was bad from the beginning, to be honest with you. Like, if that's Corey Lee's benefit, like, if that's what Corey Lee is, then instead of having to pay Victor Caratini a penny, you should have just paid Corey Lee and Yainer Diaz to be your two catchers next year. Like, I know they needed bullpen help last year, but now you need bullpen help again. I know you can't predict injuries, but you did know that, like, you're losing three guys in Stanek, Montero, and Neris, and you financially can't replace them.
Yeah, but I wonder how much Dana Brown knew how limited his purse strings would be.
I'm sure he knew
they're going to be limited, but I mean, this is as severe as it gets. They've spent nothing,
and their salary cap is high, but like Jim Crane, what bothers me about it is that like he's making these decisions, but it's his fault that they can't make more decisions. It was he and his committee who signed Montero. It was he and his committee who signed Abreu. It was he and his committee, now Brantley's gone, but like who brought you nothing last year. And like the reason why they can't sign two quality relief pitchers is because they're paying Rafael Montero way too much money. So it's frustrating. Like, just go a little over, Jim. Like, we're not asking you to go $50 million over. Go like 10 over.
Yeah, I mean, that would be
a little compromise.
It's the best baseball move, but I think what we've seen over the course of this offseason is Jim Crane's not making decisions only upon what's best for the baseball team. He's making it what's best for the network, what's best for his land deals around the ballpark with the restaurants and everything, and the baseball team is secondary to that.
Yeah. All right, who lost their job over Super Wild Card Weekend? We'll call our shot next year on the bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. We're your daddy.
You was a toilet baby. Tip just plopped down like a little old turd, just right down in a bowl.
Veritex Community Bank Studios is currently broadcasting The Bullpen. There are no real bulls inside the pen up there, but that would be awesome, wouldn't it? But the only occupant of the bullpen is this guy, Joe George.
Final segment of The Bullpen here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. You can join the show at 713-780-3776 on the text line, the HRMP listener line. I encourage you to use your ears. Weather is not an excuse.
Yeah, we had a very angry caller who was very angry at a take that we gave the opposite of.
Yeah. People were mad at me today. Should we just read these? And I don't want to screw up Jeremy's mean text. I think he'll be mad at me.
Well, is it specifically to the bullpen? That wouldn't count.
No, they're all about me during the Killer Bees.
It's Tuesday. You'll get more in. Read them.
I don't know about me. I normally don't get this much hate, but let's just read them. 7029 does not like me. So we're just going to go through to end the show today and then find out who lost their jobs in the NFL.
These are all from the same person?
Same person. Every single person. This person really does not like me. This radio show would be 10 times more valid if Joe George didn't speak. Yikes. Just ask Joe George. There's no way Lamar Jackson is better than CJ. Okay. The bullpen should stay on Bad Take Boulevard, the worst sports commentary ever. Ask Joe George's dumb bleep. I don't know if I can say it together. I'm sure he has the solution. And I'm not reading the last one because it's political in nature and I'm not going to discuss it. It's also factually incorrect. That person really.
So you have a number one fan then?
I'm pretty sure it's Willie.
You think so?
Pretty sure. Or it's one of the people I banned from Twitch. I got bad news for you. There's
yeah,
more
that could I could see that turning a banment turning into those sort of texts.
It's like they never texted the Killer Bees before today because I can look at those things and boy, this person, I really triggered them by something I said. I must have just been hating them. I feel like I was hating on Lamar Jackson based on where the conversation
maybe someone
was going.
From our dynasty league that you rejected in a trade.
Travis. For sure. All right. Who lost their jobs this weekend? Mike McCarthy. I'm going to say the answer is no.
It depends on, because Bill Belichick is interviewing in Atlanta.
He interviewed.
Past tense. So if he takes the Atlanta job, then I think that might keep Mike McCarthy safe. Although I could see Mike Vrabel getting a call from Jerry Jones as well.
Mm-hmm.
But really, after Belichick and Mike Vrabel, if those two for some reason turn down the Cowboys job or for any reason turn down the Cowboys job, then I think Mike McCarthy's safe.
Yeah, because I think that's how they're going to approach this. I think they're going to go back channel to these coaches, find out who's interested, and then make their decision. I still personally, I wonder about Harbaugh.
Yeah, if Harbaugh were to express interest, I think Mike McCarthy's gone there too. But I'm pretty well convinced now that Harbaugh is going to join up with Herbert
with the
Chargers.
Nick Sirianni. I'm going to say more confidently he should lose his job. Mike McCarthy, that was a bad
one year ago. He was 3 points away from a Super Bowl.
I know.
I get it. Look, I'm not
saying. And a bad pass interference.
Yeah. I mean, they arguably should have won that Super Bowl against the Chiefs, and I get it. But when you go one and five to finish the season and lose to a 9-8 football team, quarterback by Baker Mayfield, you kind of throw the goodwill that you had from that Super Bowl run out the window.
I hope I'm never Baker Mayfield, okay?
Well, now why is
that? Because every time he's mentioned, it's always like that. It's always like, yeah, you lost to Baker Mayfield.
It's crappy.
Insulting way you could ever talk about someone winning a football
game. But am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong. Okay. I'm just saying, I don't ever want to be Baker Mayfield, Brian.
That's fair. But yeah, I think Sirianni.
Killer Bees are the number one show in Houston sports radio ratings. But there's Joe George. I don't want to be Joe George. I don't want to be that guy.
You don't want to be Joe George.
The 702.
You're kind of locked into that one.
That's what 7029 would say.
That
would
is
say,
true.
I mean, that's actually what he said. He said, I make the show unlistenable. Sorry. Not sorry.
I'm not going to go there. So, back to the Eagles. I would say that there was a lot of people that kind of noticed, and maybe this is more from a fantasy perspective and maybe like a stats and not necessarily, because obviously they started 10-1, they weren't having many problems. But there were some people that pointed out there was the differences in the stats from when the two coordinators that ended up taking the Colts and the Cardinals jobs left to this season. And some people drawing the conclusion that this Eagles' success last year was more on their two coordinators than it was Sirianni.
It's hard to ignore.
When you finish 1-5, and I'll say it again for your benefit, Joe, and you lose to Baker Mayfield,
it's
hard to argue against the fact that maybe it was those two coordinators and not Nick Sirianni.
Yeah.
So that, if the Eagles ownership sees that the same way, could lead to Nick Sirianni getting canned.
Yeah, I think there's a good chance he gets canned. If he doesn't, I think he better start good next year.
If they go 0-3, 1-4,
he's out.
Right. He can't survive past the midway point of the season with a bad start.
It kind of feels like Bill O'Brien.
Going into the 2020 season?
Yeah. Bill O'Brien, yes, he had just got an extension not that long before.
I think he started, fired at 0-3 or 0-4?
0-4.
0-4, okay.
They had won a playoff game, but then they had a 24-0 lead versus the Chiefs. They obviously blew it. And then 2020 gets here, and they lose the first four games. J.J. Watt, and we all know the reporting. Granato had stuff about it. This isn't working anymore. I think that might be more likely to what we're going with Sirianni is that at next year, at any point, it goes wrong. They could go 5-1. And they end up at 5-5. He's out. I think Sirianni starts next season as the Eagles head coach, but I don't think he makes it through the end of the season.
Yeah, I can agree with that.
Last one here. We got about a minute left.
All right, I'm going to quickly throw out
Tua.
Tua, yeah. Tua, I think, I don't know. He's still kind of cheap for quarterback. I wanted to throw out Tony Pollard. He was only 4 yards.
Yeah.
He was only 4 yards per carry this year. He's obviously a free agent at the end of the season. The Cowboys are just going to move on. He wasn't good enough for the Cowboys to bring back.
Yeah, he's out. I think there's a small chance Tua's out.
Man, we don't have enough time to really get into this, but I disagree that Tua. I think he at least starts next season, but maybe if he has a few bad games to start the season, then maybe he could lose his job after that.
All right, that's going to do it for us here on the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. I'm Joe George. He is Brian McDonald. We will be back with another one of these shows on Friday. Off to Marks, we'll be at the Decoy from 12 to 6. Come hang out with us and the Killer Bees. See ya.
ESPN 97.5.com. Aya Cane Powder.
Never go in against a Sicilian when death is on the line.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.